You're listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. This is Minute 97. This minute begins with David saying, "It's a cargo hold," and ends with Yannick saying, "It's a goddamn ship." I keep coming back to the line, want, not a concept I'm familiar with. I've been trying to include my thoughts in the scripts the past few weeks now, and I couldn't quite nail what I was trying to say until now. Hopefully. Current discussions on AI draw a distinct line between artificial intelligence and artificial consciousness, but the more I look into AI and human consciousness and intelligence, I'm beginning to wonder if it is even possible to have one without the other. To have a fully functioning android, it needs to be self-governing to a degree, even if it is designed only to work in one room of the house, say, the kitchen. With current AI, every task needs to be specifically programmed and defined. This is much more complicated when the AI exists in a physical body in the physical world. If you ask an android to make you some tea, it needs to know exactly where everything is. Does it know what to do if you're out of items? Can it adapt to unexpected challenges? Could you bring it to your friend's house and expect it to know what to do in a different layout and with a different kettle? Every single one of those variables would have to be specifically written into its code given the way current AI works. This has led to some catastrophic results in the case of self-driving cars. A self-driving Uber killed a woman who was jaywalking because it had only ever been programmed to recognize pedestrians at crosswalks. It had no capacity to use its own judgment because it has none. By the way, the Uber driver who was sitting behind the wheel was supposed to be there to ensure something like this didn't happen, but she was too busy watching The Voice and not the road. This isn't the first incident like this, and likely won't be the last. Human drivers become complacent and come to trust these automated vehicles. Sooner or later, something unexpected is going to happen on the road, and the moment it does, the car is going to charge ahead as if nothing is wrong. This is one of the biggest problems with AI, in my opinion. How do we create something that can actually think for itself and can actually respond to stimulus? And would it have to resemble something like a human mind? We have a very small sample size of what sophisticated intelligence looks like. And all of it is terrestrial. That being said, we can note that there are many things in common. There's instinct, intuition, memory, a sense of self in relation to the world and others. There's the ability to problem solve new and novel challenges without having similar experiences prior. In short, consciousness. Now, consciousness arose in animals likely as the result of the need to move and hunt or forage, to find a mate and to seek safety and shelter. It all arose from being an organic living creature with needs and emotions, and you aren't likely to do that without the intelligence to survive. Granted, there are some creatures like the tunicate, which is born with a brain, which it uses only to seek a place to set itself down for the rest of its life, and then it proceeds to eat its own brain, as it doesn't need it anymore. But that's a whole other story. I've recently been reading a great book called Intelligence in the Flesh by Guy Claxton. He's written some great stuff on neuroscience. This book makes the case that we are not just our brains. Intelligence is found in the body too. We rely on the entire system in order to function. Therein lies another problem for AI. Can a disembodied intelligence gain consciousness? Or will it be more like the ship's computer in Star Trek? It can follow commands and that's about it. David has a body. So far, so good. But coming back to my initial point, the concept of want. Is this something an AI would need to function? All living things need some semblance of emotion, or they would have no motivation to do anything. In my very amateur opinion, it makes more sense for the precise nature in which a command is executed to be almost entirely within the hands of the AI. Moreover, it should have some sense of want governing it to want to accomplish a task well. If I tell an android to sweep and mop my floors, I expect it to be able to know where the mop and broom and detergent are kept. I expect it to know to pick up objects and maneuver around obstacles without being told. A Roomba can't do any of that. It has no AI. It has a primitive sensor to let it know when it has bumped into an obstacle and to change direction. It has a largely predetermined path to follow. It can't respond to stimulus in a real way that a living being might. Apparently, in East Asian countries where it is common to sleep on the floor, there have been numerous emergency calls when unsuspecting victims wake up to find their Roomba trying to eat their hair. Roombas are dumb robots. And sure, in the case of a Roomba, which has a very limited task to accomplish, it could do very well with sophisticated AI as we know it. All it needs to do is recognize objects, avoid them, or suck them up. It has a very narrow series of variables to program. But much like the self-driving car, you cannot account for all the variables. Sooner or later, something unexpected will happen. Granted, the consequences of a Roomba making a mistake are much lower than that of an automated car. If we truly want to make androids, then they can't just look like us. They need to think like us. That consciousness may not stem from a desire to survive, to reproduce, to eat, and to be comfortable, but I believe it may be possible to build a consciousness around the desire to serve. Everything about this mind should be dedicated to accomplishing tasks as best as it can. They should be largely self-governing in terms of the how. But as for the what, that would have to be explicitly written into its programming. By this I mean programmers would build in rules, be that Asimov's three laws or some more detailed series of laws of ethical conduct. When I tell you, don't harm anyone or through an action allow them to come to harm, you understand that pretty clearly, right? You as a conscious being can use your memories, personal feelings, and intuition to figure out how best to execute this command. But an AI can't. You have to imagine every single possible scenario and write that into its code. Don't stab people, don't push people from great heights, don't drown people, don't set people on fire. You would be there for an eternity writing that code. You see the problem current AI faces. It can be incredible at exceptionally narrow tasks. Machine learning gives us deepfakes, it gives us better and more accurate medical diagnoses. It can generate art and music that are so convincing it even fools critics. Machine learning has accomplished all kinds of things we didn't think computers could do a mere decade ago. And it's funny going back and watching Star Trek The Next Generation now and seeing Data claim that he can't create the way humans can. You know who can create? David. He is perfectly capable of navigating this alien world and its technology. He didn't need any specific commands. Before setting off to LV-223, Wayland presumably said, I need you to figure out how this language presumably works, you know, how we could theoretically communicate with these engineers. And so David went off and just worked that out on his own. He didn't need to be given very specific inputs in order for him to do his job. But current AI doing all this machine learning, you need to give it a very specific command or set of commands. And when David was alone on Planet 4, he was capable of keeping himself busy with the things that took his interest. Now, while David is a highly emotional android, I think real androids that I'm proposing should want to do nothing more than a good job. But if they fail, you can't allow them to become too upset. Essentially, my proposal is that in order to create an android, particularly like the synthetics in the alien universe, they must think like us to a degree. And that includes desire and curiosity. Ash had no regard for his own life. Everything about his existence revolved around the acquisition and study of the xenomorph. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's how it should work as I imagine it. He's human-like, but in a very narrow way. His appearance might not be in the uncanny valley, but his mind certainly is. He doesn't have an entire life of his own, but he is fully alive and conscious in one very specific mission he has been given. All other priorities rescinded. It makes me wonder, if Walter survived Alien Covenant, what would he have done? The top priority would be to rescue the crew. He would know that without having to be told. He would instinctively want to accomplish this goal, and he would use his judgment to figure out a way to do that. You can't problem solve in an alien world without consciousness. I'm so keen to explore Walter's mind more in Covenant Minute. But right now, I'm still on the minutes with David at the beginning. God, I'm sick of that guy. And, I mean, I said, if Walter had survived, I mean, I hope he did. I would be pretty great if he shows up for the third one. Bring Vickers back too, I don't care. I mean, just figure out a way, I don't care, just bring Vickers back. Will it be dangerous to create AI like this? It's impossible to say. It's purely hypothetical and came out of my head right now. It depends how tightly governed its behavioral and ethical limitations are. Wayland clearly cared very little about ethics, and therefore we are seeing a very badly behaved android. He has been created with the capacity to have a private inner life, to have desires and interests of his own that stand apart from the interests of the humans he serves. That's the line you draw. Give these things a desire and interest only to do their jobs. Much like Walter. Not much else happens in this minute. Shaw reports back to Yannick, showing him the ampules. Yannick starts to piece things together. Sadly, those who only watch the movie without the deleted scenes would have no idea he is actually using his expertise and knowledge of past experiences here. I mean, you can assume because he is a captain he knows a thing or two, but I will never not be mad that the scene between Vickers and Yannick was cut. You know that about me by now. Yannick investigates the hologram taken from the structure, and realizes the space containing the ampules is actually a ship. The design of the ship is so alien, but given it is a large, free-floating structure within the pyramid, it is the only sensible conclusion to come to. So now, the stakes have been established. Regardless of the engineer's intentions, this is a weapon of mass destruction that he can, at any time, use. Now we are made to worry that if Weyland screws up this encounter, it could spell the end for humanity. Of course, we now know that, ultimately, nothing Weyland did mattered, and the engineer was planning on doing this from before he woke up anyway, but oh well. I'll leave you with a quick excerpt from the Prometheus script. Weyland, a cargo hold for what, exactly? David, the ampule canisters that contain the engineer's Black Death. Black Death? I call it that because all it does is kill. Or sometimes it can transform living cells and create something new. Something designed to kill everything else. Is it the same stuff you brought back to the ship? Shaw stops and looks at David in shock. She knows now. Yes, sir. But it never had the effect I was hoping for. There's more cargo holds like this one? These canisters contain the failed attempt of cloning their lord's blood. Below us is their failed attempt of cloning their lord in question. If they are failed experiments, then why keep them? I have no proof, but I believe they realize their potential as a weapon. This obviously explains stuff that is best kept open to the audience's interpretation in the film, and all the information here is conveyed throughout the movie in numerous ways across numerous scenes. Still, I am intrigued by the lines about their lord's blood. This ties into the implications of the mural. The engineers worship some kind of deity that looks like the xenomorph. I'm not entirely sure what he means by below is their failed attempt at cloning their lord. All monsters are accounted for, and they aren't here or below the Juggernaut. This is the Prometheus script, so very little has changed between this and the final film. Maybe I'm just missing something, I don't know. It is very rewarding to analyze this film and the scripts in regards to the engineers especially. They are mysterious, but it seems that generally whatever theories I imagined turned out to have been the intentions of the filmmakers. So they have done a very good job of wordlessly conveying a lot about these beings. Since I analyzed the mural, I imagine the engineers must have worshipped something like the xenomorph, and must have regarded it as the perfect organism, something to which they aspired. What that creature was, we might never know. It is interesting to note, however, that this primordial xenomorph doesn't seem to take highest priority amongst the engineer statues. It's far more common to see giant engineer heads, presumably referencing significant ancestors. In Covenant, it is especially clear that they have unique appearances, they're not just generic faces. But we see no tribute to the primordial xenomorph in the engineer homeworld. This mural is the only one, and it is small and understated. It may be that their cultures and customs are different from ours, and that abundance of representation does not reflect the importance of an idol. It could be that the primordial xeno is only depicted in very specific locations or circumstances. Humans have somewhat similar customs. Allah is never depicted, Muhammad is more debatable, but generally it's not done. And even the Judeo-Christian God is hardly described and hardly depicted. The most specific descriptive passage I could find, at least guided by memory, was Revelations 1:14. The hairs of his head were white wool, like snow. His eyes were like flame of fire. So God looks like Geralt from The Witcher. Cool. Over time, modern interpretations posit that God's true appearance cannot be witnessed by human beings because it is too overwhelming, kind of like Galactus. Actually, even in early traditions, the angels, I can't remember which rank, maybe the archangels? They had several wings all over their bodies, and one pair was to cover their eyes from the glorious, blinding light of God. It was the seraphim, that's right, the seraphim. My point being that we cannot project our cultural biases onto the engineers. We cannot know their values and beliefs given the information we have available. If there is a third film, it will be interesting to see how much it influences the reading of the preceding two films. Already, I find it hard to review Prometheus without reflecting on its relationship to Covenant. That being said, I think it's unlikely I'll look back and feel like, oh, you know, maybe I should have waited until the trilogy was complete to have made a proper analysis, because I think the way these films are made, every film in the Alien franchise is quite standalone and goes in very different directions. Even these Alien prequels, in terms of style, in terms of themes, it's night and day almost. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by a Minute on Facebook. And if you would like to listen to Covenant Minute or Legacy Minute, the podcast reviewing Tron Legacy, head on over to patreon.com/TravianDesigns, where you can join my current Patreon pals, Mark Bodo, Tariq, and William Elkhart.